when the Grammys air on CBS.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Mario Ritter. This program is designed for English learners. So we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. This is what you will hear on today's program. Dan Friedell tells about an American tradition on February 2nd, Groundhog Day. Then, Jill Robbins gives us a lesson on everyday grammar. After that, Jill tells me more about grammar and cookies. Then, finally, our American History series. But first, Katie Weaver has the latest on cooperation between the U.S. and the Philippines.
The United States and the Philippines on Thursday announced plans to expand America's military presence in the Southeast Asian nation. The U.S. now has access to 4 more Philippine bases. The agreement comes as the U.S. seeks to counter China's increasingly aggressive actions toward Taiwan and in the disputed South China Sea. The two nations reached the agreement while U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin was in the country for talks. In an announcement by the Philippines and the U.S., the two said they had decided to move forward in their so-called Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement, ECDA. The agreement aims to support combined training, exercises, and operations. As part of the agreement, the U.S. has budgeted $82 million toward structural improvements at 5 current EDCA sites. The U.S. will also expand its military presence to 4 new sites in strategic areas of the country, the statement said. Austin's visit and the agreement follow months of high-level talks between the U.S. and the Philippines. The goal of the talks was to improve relations between the two countries and to find ways to deal with China. China has taken an aggressive stand toward the Philippines' territorial claims in the South China Sea. Philippine President Ferdinand Marcos Jr., while not naming China, said on Thursday that tensions in the area are very complicated. It seems to me the future of the Philippines, and for that matter, the Asia-Pacific, will always have to involve the United States, simply because those partnerships are so strong, Marcos said. The U.S. has about 500 troops in the Philippines. Of those, 150 are based in Zamboanga, a city that has come under repeated attacks by terrorists. More recently, U.S. forces have helped train Philippine troops on the nation's western coast, which faces the South China Sea. The U.S. has also trained Philippine forces in its northern Luzon area, across the sea from the Taiwan Strait. The U.S. Defense Chief is the latest senior official to visit the Philippines after Vice President Kamala Harris in November. The two countries are trying to improve relations after an uneasy period under past President Rodrigo Duterte. Philippine Ambassador to Washington, Jose Romualdez, said the Philippines needed to cooperate with Washington to prevent any escalation of tensions between China and Taiwan. Along with the Philippines and Taiwan, the nations of Brunei, Malaysia, and Vietnam are involved in increasingly tense territorial disputes with China in the South China Sea. The U.S. has also promised to come to the defense of the Philippines if it comes under attack in the disputed waters. The Philippines used to house two of the largest U.S. Navy and Air Force bases outside the mainland U.S. The bases closed early in the 1990s after the Philippine Senate rejected an extension. But American forces returned for combat exercises with Philippine troops under a 1999 agreement. The Philippine Constitution bans the permanent basing of foreign troops and their involvement in local combat. I'm Katie Weaver.
A groundhog from the small town of Punxsutawney in the state of Pennsylvania again predicted that North America would have six more weeks of winter. On Thursday, thousands of people gathered around a hill called Gobbler's Knob to watch the yearly event. A group of men in black coats and top hats woke up the groundhog from his long winter sleep. It was as if the groundhog, named Punxsutawney Phil, told them, "I see a shadow. It's six more weeks of winter weather." Since 1887, tradition says that if Punxsutawney Phil does not see his shadow on Groundhog Day, February 2nd, spring will come early. Groundhog Day is believed to have come from the ancient European tradition of Candlemas Day. On that day, clergy would bless and give out candles to Christians for the long winter. Some versions of the ancient story say that in parts of Germany, people thought that if a hedgehog saw his shadow on Candlemas Day, there would be a second winter, or six more weeks of bad weather. As Germans migrated to what is now the state of Pennsylvania, they chose another animal, and Groundhog Day was born. The tradition is celebrated in many places around the United States and Canada. Countdown to Groundhog Day keeps a list showing 157 such celebrations in North America. But the animals do not always agree, and not all of them are groundhogs. Staten Island Chuck, a groundhog once known for biting the finger of then New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, predicted it would be an early spring. It is hard to argue with that, since the National Weather Service said on the social media service Twitter that the lack of snow in the Northeast has been extremely unusual this year. In the state of Connecticut, Beardsley Bart, a prairie dog in Bridgeport, also predicted it would be an early spring this year. But Scramble the Duck Jr. said it would be a long winter in nearby Eastford. In the state of Ohio, Benny the Bass, a fish, ate a minnow, or a small fish, soon after its release. the Buckeye Lake Region Chamber of Commerce Winterfest said, "It means there will be an early spring." Tad and Lil, two frogs from Snohomish in the state of Washington, agreed that spring would come early on their own Ground Frog Day celebration. I'm Dan Friedel.
After the winter holidays, some of us may feel the need to exercise and get healthy. We may have been eating richer foods than usual at meals shared with friends and families. During the winter months, gyms and sellers of exercise equipment often have an increase in business. One of our readers asked about expressions like, "The more you eat, the bigger your stomach gets." This expression is a good example of a time when we use the definite article "the" with comparative adjectives. In this case, the comparative adjectives are bigger and more. Today's lesson will center on this kind of structure. Let us review first how we usually use comparatives. They are adjectives, words that give more information about or describe a noun. Here is an example.
Marco's New Year's party this year was bigger than last year.
In this sentence, bigger is an adjective describing the noun party. The main thing to understand about using comparatives is that you are talking about the relationship of one thing to other things. When we have two expressions using the plus comparative, we are showing a relationship where one thing changes in relation to the other. Let us look at another example. Our friend Marco says he spent too much money on his huge party. He says that is because
the bigger the party, the more food and drinks you must buy.
As you may remember, basic English sentences have a subject followed by a verb and sometimes an object. The subject and object are nouns. Generally, a verb comes before the object. For example,
you must buy more food and drinks.
Something interesting happens to the usual word order in these sentences, however. In our example, we heard the verb phrase after the object.
The more food and drinks you must buy.
And we can sometimes leave out the verb with one of the subject nouns. Our earlier sentence could also be said this way.
The bigger the party is, the more food and drinks you must buy.
Now you can try making your own sentences with comparatives. Here are parts that you can combine to make the sentence type we have talked about. Remember, you can choose to include one of the verbs if you like. 1.
You get closer to the book.
And?
The text becomes clearer.
Write down your sentence. And here are two more parts. 2.
The sun rises higher.
And?
You feel warmer.
Got it? Now listen to the sentences and check yours. Sentence 1.
The closer you get to the book, the clearer the text.
And sentence 2.
The higher the sun, the warmer you feel.
I'm sure you did a good job. And that's Everyday Grammar. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Dan Novak.
And now, Dr. Jill tells us more about today's Everyday Grammar program. Hi, Dr. Jill. I think I learned something in that program. But don't we use the with comparative adjectives in other ways, too?
Sure, Mario. I just happen to have a plate of cookies here. They are my famous cowboy cookies, with lots of nuts and oats. Unfortunately, our colleagues have eaten almost all of them. There are only two left for us to share. One big one and one small one. Ask me which one I want.
All right. Which cookie do you want, Dr. Jill?
I'm kind of full right now, so I'll take the smaller.
I get it. There, the smaller is acting like a noun.
Right. I could also say, Mario, you look hungry. Why don't you take the bigger of the two cookies?
Well, we could say, the more cookies you make, the more everyone wants to eat them.
Enjoy your cookie, Mario.
Thank you, Dr. Jill. You do the same. Next, American History on VOA, Learning English.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. During the 1800s, the federal government forced Native American Indians to live in special areas. These were called reservations. The Indians no longer could move freely over the Great Plains to hunt buffalo. White men were settling there. The situation resulted in violence. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe continue the story of these Western wars.
The government sent soldiers to force the Indians to move to reservations. But the soldiers could not keep them there. Groups of Indians would leave the reservations in the spring. They followed the buffalo across the plains. Some raided the homes of white settlers. They stole horses and cattle. At the end of the summer, the Indians would return to the reservations, and the government would give them food for the winter.
As years passed, fewer Indians left the reservations to live the old life on the plains. It became difficult to find buffalo. The plains were becoming empty. Only a few years before, millions of buffalo lived on the Great Plains. Then railroads were built across the country. White men came to claim the grasslands. They put up fences. Cowboys came up from Texas with huge groups of cattle. They forced the buffalo away or killed them. The Indians tried to prevent this killing. Angry groups of Indians often attacked white buffalo hunters. But the army was too strong. Soldiers killed or captured many Indians. Finally, most Indians gave up the struggle. They surrendered their guns and horses. They went back to the reservations and became farmers.
All this was taking place in what is now the South Central part of the United States. Far to the north, another struggle was taking place involving the Great Sioux Indian tribe. The Sioux had signed a treaty with the government in 1868. The treaty gave them a large reservation in what is now Nebraska, South Dakota, and Wyoming. The Black Hills in Dakota were part of the reservation. These hills were important to the Sioux. In their religion, the Black Hills were a holy place. They were the center of their world, where the gods lived. They were the place where Indian fighters went to speak with the Great Spirit.
In 1873, the Black Hills suddenly became important to white men, too. Gold was discovered there. Treaties and religion meant nothing to the white miners who rushed to the Black Hills to search for gold. At first, the Indians killed some of the miners. They chased others away. But more miners came. The Sioux tribe asked the government to enforce the treaty. Tribal leaders asked the government to keep white men away from the reservation. The army sent soldiers to remove the miners. The soldiers ordered the miners to leave, but they made no effort to enforce the order. Again, the Indians protested. This time, the government sent officials to negotiate a new treaty. It asked the Sioux Indians to give up the Black Hills. Some of the Indian leaders refused to negotiate. One who rejected the invitation was Sitting Bull. "I do not want to sell any land to the government," Chief Sitting Bull said. He held a little dust between his fingers. "Not even this much."
This resistance did not stop government efforts to get the Black Hills for the miners. The War Department sent General George Crook to punish the Indians and force them back to their reservation. Crook led a large force into Sioux country. He surprised an Indian village, capturing hundreds of horses. There was another clash a few months later. This time, the result was very different. The Indians gave the army its worst defeat in almost a century.
The battle took place near the Little Bighorn River. General George Custer led 212 soldiers in search of the Indian leader Crazy Horse. As General Custer moved through the river valley, he sent men ahead to explore the area. His men returned with reports that thousands of Indians were waiting to attack. Custer refused to listen. He pushed forward. Soon his forces were surrounded by Indians. In less than an hour, the Indians killed the general and every one of his men. The white soldiers lay dead at Little Bighorn. And Custer's name would go down in history as a symbol of foolish pride in battle. The battle at Little Bighorn was a serious defeat for the United States Army. But the Indians' victory did not last long. Within a year, the Army forced most of the Sioux to surrender. It took the Black Hills for the miners. It moved the Indians to a new reservation.
the next few years, the same thing happened to other Indian tribes throughout the West. Under great pressure from white settlers, the government took land from the Indians and opened it to settlement. The size of Indian reservations was reduced again and again. One by one, the Indian tribes of the West changed. Their fierce fighters became farmers who needed government help. They were weak and broken in spirit. One Indian leader named Black Elk described the situation best. He was a survivor of a battle at a place called Wounded Knee. Many Indian women and children had died there. Years later, Black Elk said, "I did not know then how much was ended. When I look back now from this high hill of my old age, I can still see the dead lying all over the ground. And I can see that something else died there in the bloody mud and was buried. A people's dream died there."
Some Indians turned to religion during this difficult time. An Indian religious leader named Wovoka gained influence. Wovoka declared that the Great Spirit had chosen him to prepare the Indians for a new world. He said the new world would arrive soon, and it would be a wonderful world. There would be no white men, he said, and all dead Indians would come back to life. Wovoka warned that new soil would rise up and cover the world like a flood. He said Indians could escape destruction by dancing a special dance. It was called the Ghost Dance. Wovoka said the ghost dance would make Indians powerful. He said it would even protect them from bullets fired by the white men's guns.
Thousands of Indians in the American West listened to Wovoka's message. They believed him, and they began to dance for long hours every day. On the Sioux reservations, all other activities stopped. Children no longer went to school. No one did anything but dance. All this frightened white officials. They tried to arrest some Indian leaders to stop the dancing. The arrests led to fighting, and the fighting led to a final battle in which the army defeated the Indians completely. The Indian wars were over. Wovoka himself told his followers, "Our trails are covered with grass and sand. We cannot find them. Today, I call upon you to travel a new trail. It is the only trail now open, the white man's road."
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow for another Learning English program on the Voice of America.